Morning. All right. So I've been celebrating little things this year as I get more and more assimilated into the community. I was really excited the first time I had a co-op conversation. And this morning I was able to drink the tap water from the church and not gag. So I'm fitting in. Anyways. So if you're new here this morning, and even if you're not, a reminder for you. At the bottom of the screen, I have a text to question two number. This morning, I feel like I'm exploring a topic that I was surprised to find out I knew very little about what I'm preaching about this morning, and had to do a lot of research. I spent the last couple weeks doing far more research than I thought I'd have to. I ended up learning a lot more than I thought I would about the Sabbath. I thought I had an idea of it. I was sadly misinformed, and now I feel like I have a much better grasp, and hopefully I can communicate that to you. So as I preach this morning, if it raises questions, if something comes up in your mind, if you're going, man, that's a weird thing to say, or that doesn't make sense, or can you go further into that explanation, feel free to please either raise your hand, yell it out, or send a text if you're a little more shy. And my phone's up here on silent, and I'll just check it every now and then to see if I've got a text, and I'll try to answer those questions. And hopefully without disrupting the service. We'll see. I'll probably disrupt it myself without the cell phone. So I'm going to tuck that out of my way for now. Okay, so I've been working through this series called Playing by the Rules. The idea behind this is that like a board game, the Christian life has some guidelines or outlines on how to live it. In a board game like Settlers of Catan, which is the picture I use up there, the goal of the game is to get 10 points. And the first thing in a rule book is always, how do you win? The goal. How do you succeed at the game? And so the goal of the game is to get 10 points in the game of Settlers of Catan. Now it's... if there's no other rules other than just get 10 points, the game would result in a lot of arguing or claiming on how to do it. There'd be multiple paths to the same goal. Someone might say, well, I got 10 points. I said it first, you know. 1, 2, 3, 10 points. I got it. Someone might just start throwing their pieces around and saying, you know, this is worth points and this is worth points. So this piece will be worth 5 points. This one's worth 2 points. And I'll just do it this way and I'll play my own game. And people start living or playing with multiple paths to the same goal of getting the 10 points. In a similar way, I find that the Christian life has these guidelines, these rules. We have the Ten Commandments. We also have the whole life of Christ to give us sort of a guideline on how to live. But so many people decide that they're just going to read what the goal is. The goal is, oh, I'm going to live in heaven. I'm going to be a good person. I'm going to have eternity with Christ. And then they decide to go their own way to get to that goal. And they go their own multiple paths to it. So we're going to explore through the Ten Commandments over the course of the year whenever I get the chance to speak, whenever Chris is wanted to take a break or is not around or he gets asked to speak at some other conference, then I get to step in and I will do one of the Ten Commandments. So we've done the first three already. Remember the Lord's name, don't worship idols, and have no other gods. And today we're going to be doing the fourth commandment, which is remember the Sabbath. Now there's an interesting way that I like to approach these. Again, like a rule book. In some ways. So in a rule book, when someone reads a rule book, they read it, three things come out of it, or three approaches are used when approaching a rule book. I should use the right wording here. Three approaches are used when approaching a rule book. Now, I play a lot of games. I used to work at a game store, and so I saw this in action a lot. So the first approach to a rule book is rule as written, or raw, which is the literal words used in the rule book. This includes typos, and you play the typos. You look for the loopholes. Someone who approaches the rules as written are looking for the literal words. Then the second approach is rules as intended. So they get an idea of the goal of the game, sort of a feel for what the game is supposed to do, and the rule as intended says, I'm going to try to read this and understand it the way that the rule writer wants the game to be played. So the rule may not be this literally quite like this, because what they really are intending is a certain sort of approach or feel to the game. So, for example, in Settlers of Catan, one of the rules is that you can trade for resources. Now, there's a lot of ways you could debate with that. This feeling of, you could go rule as written. I can offer a trade and you have to accept it or not accept it. So I'm going to offer three things for one thing, or I'm going to offer one thing and I want three in return. And that's the rule as written, totally allowed to be played that way. Rule as intended, though, is this atmosphere of trading and bartering and trying to get the resources you need by trading the resources you have an abundance of, and it creates this atmosphere of the game. So there's a rule as intended. And then finally, there's the errata. So when all the debating and the arguing over what the rules literally say and how the atmosphere of the rules is supposed to be, in comes the rule makers, the game makers, and they come in and they give you the errata. They clarify the rule. And so again, in the Bible, we have these Ten Commandments that over 6,000 years have been distorted through various people trying to do them literally, trying to figure out God's intention behind them and change them. Or in the Pharisees' case, they made over 600 extra rules to protect from breaking the Ten Rules. Or, well, a little more than that, but to protect you from breaking the rules. And then we have Jesus show up, and he gives us the errata. He corrects. He reintroduces the people and the Pharisees to this idea of what the rules really are for, what they stand for, what their purpose is, and what the real meaning was. He provides us the errata. So this morning, we're going to look at the Sabbath in the same kind of terms. We're going to look at the rule as written, we're going to look at the rule as intended, and we're going to look at the errata. So hopefully that goes well. So when I talk about Sabbath, I sometimes wonder what kind of thoughts come into your mind. I'm not going to ask for a bunch of stories or anything, but when I say Sabbath, I think about various different things that people have experienced for Sabbath. Maybe you're a little bit biblically educated and you think Sabbath is a Saturday. The Jewish people practiced a day of resting. They had a bunch of rules about what they could and couldn't do on that day, and that's what Sabbath is. Some of you, like me, might be misinformed prior to me doing this, where I thought Sabbath was church. That Sunday morning church equals Sabbath. I was sadly misinformed, very, very misinformed. That's not what Sabbath is. We're going to explore that more. Or you might have all sorts of memories of Sabbath. Maybe negative memories of Sabbath, maybe positive. I hope they're positive. My number one memory of Sabbath is as a child, Sundays was our Sabbath day in our house. And we would get up in the morning, we'd go to church, and that was great, and I loved church. All my friends were there, and I fit in there, and I didn't get picked on there, and there was no lockers to shove me into. Sorry, I'm running out of breath. Whew. There's no lockers there, yeah, to shove me into. Okay, joke. Okay. So Sunday morning, church was great. Then Sunday afternoon, we'd go home, and we'd have lunch. And then my dad would sit down on his lazy boy chair, and he'd turn on either poker or Star Trek, or have both so he could switch between when the commercials came up. And my mom would sit down, she'd start knitting, and I'd say, can I go skateboarding with Greg, with my buddy? And my parents would go, no, today's a day for family. So I'd sit down on the couch, and I'd take a nap while my dad watched poker and usually fell asleep, and my mom knitted. And we didn't do things as a family. And so to me, Sabbath became this idea of Sabbath was Sunday morning church, and then the rest of the day I just had to be lazy or lay around or not do anything, and that it was a time to just sleep all afternoon because it was a time for family, which was watching Star Trek or, you know, knitting. So my experience of Sabbath, I think, is a little bit uninformed as to what Sabbath really is. And you may have had similar Sabbath experiences. There was a time, definitely, where Sabbath was a day where you just went home and you did nothing. And that time may still exist for some of you. But where Sabbath was just a time where you did nothing. You had to just not do anything. You sit down and just relax. I quote that because sometimes I find sitting down isn't relaxing. So I hope today to go into looking at these three main points. The problem of busyness. So that's first looking at the rule as it's written and why does it exist? The problem with busyness is all about recognizing first why this rule exists. Secondly, we're going to look at the need for rest, so the importance of taking Sabbath. And thirdly, we're going to look at the errata, which is the holiness of the Sabbath, or a holy Sabbath. And that's where I'm going to talk a lot about how we do Sabbath today. So let's get into this together. We're going to start off with a problem with busyness. And now my slides aren't switching. There it goes. So this commandment is quite interesting, and I was going to do a little aside as well about commandments. Well, I explained and I compared this Ten Commandments to like a board game rule book. There is a significant, very significant difference. Well, several significant differences, but one of them is very significant here. In a board game rule book, the game requires you to play exactly by the rules. In the Christian life, we are not slaves to the Ten Commandments. Salvation isn't through our adherence to these commandments. There's room for failure because we have salvation through Christ, not through the law. Okay, so while these commandments do matter, they do give us direction and guidance for where we go, we aren't bound by them. We're not slaves to them. Okay, so that's a very important difference. That said, these commandments are about providing the right heart orientation. Chris mentioned heart orientation earlier. A heart orientation towards living rightly, or living the way God intends us to live. And so this fourth commandment is very unique because it is not prohibitive. Where other commandments say things like do not lie, do not steal, do not have any other gods, this one says you shall have a Sabbath. So let's look at exactly how it's written. And we're going to look in two places because it is written in two places. First in Exodus, which is the original giving of the law in the story. And Deuteronomy is written again in chapter 5 of Deuteronomy, which I found out this week. Deuteronomy means the law revisited or the law again. Didn't know that. Studying learns all kinds of things. So let's look at how it's written. I'm going to read it in both of them, and then we're going to sort of break apart some of the differences. So we're in chapter 20 of Exodus, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Okay. Let's take a look at Deuteronomy 5 and see how similar and different it is. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 12. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor the alien within your gates, so that your manservant and maidservant may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Did you notice the differences? They're subtle, but they're there. At the beginning of the commandment, they're largely identical. Largely identical. But there's a significant difference that comes in the second or the final part of the commandments. So let's look at the Exodus chapter first. Creation is the basis of Sabbath in Exodus chapter 20. Creation happened in 6 days, and on the seventh day God rested. Therefore, the seventh day is made holy because of God's rest. It is a picture of Eden. God looks at it and he says, this is very good. And at that point, he then ceases creation and takes a break. It's an opportunity for us to be reminded that Eden is the goal, that Eden is good, and that we want to return to that place of relationship with Christ, relationship with each other, relationship with creation, where Eden, where everything was looked at and was very good. It's a image that we are to imitate. In Exodus 20, we're encouraged to imitate the divine, to copy God's behavior. God worked for 6 days, took a break from his work of creation on the sixth day. In the same way, we should imitate the divine behavior. If it's good enough for God, it should be good enough for us. So be like God and challenge yourself to return to Eden. That is the goal or the point of the Exodus 20 version of creation. Now in Deuteronomy 5, it takes a different look. The beginning of the law is, again, all the same, but then it changes how, or the reason for why you should be practicing Sabbath. It says, you were once slaves in Egypt, and God rescued you with a mighty arm, or mighty hand and outstretched arm. It speaks of liberation. The day of Sabbath is a day of liberation, of freedom from Egypt, rather than returning to Eden. It's a escape from Egypt, from slavery. It's about receiving deliverance rather than imitating the divine. It's about never being a slave again and about never returning to the place of slavery. Do you see the differences? Now, I don't want to say that one is a different approach than, they're different in their approach to the Sabbath, and yet both are necessary for a proper Sabbath. We are to imitate the divine on the Sabbath. We are also to receive deliverance from slavery. See, the interesting thing about the Sabbath, and it's brought up right here in this passage really well, in these two passages in their contrast, is that we are slaves. And the interesting thing about the Sabbath is that slaves do not have freedom to take a break. Slaves don't choose when they rest. Slaves don't choose when they stop working. Slaves work when they're told to work, and they stop when they're allowed to, when they're told they're allowed to. The interesting thing about Sabbath is that it's a gift. It's a law that God has given and said, remember to take a break. Remember to stop working. Do it on the seventh day. That's when I did it. Worked for me. Don't forget to rest. Now, we're not slaves to God. God isn't saying, work all 6 days and then take a seventh day rest. He's saying, you're free to take this rest. Sabbath day is a liberation. Sabbath is an opportunity to be free of that which holds us down all week or keeps us enslaved. And I would argue that the enslavement that we suffer is to busyness, especially in our culture. Our culture as a whole is enslaved to busyness because capitalism is busyness. We are enslaved to this idea that time equals money. We're enslaved to this idea that if we are ever sitting down or not working or even just taking a load off for 5 minutes, that we're lazy. How many of you have thought that to yourself when you're reading a book for leisure? You thought, man, I'm lazy, I gotta go do this other task. You know there's another job to go do. There's always more jobs to go do, especially if you're on a farm. I mean, we're in farming country. There's never an end of work on a farm. Am I right? I don't know. I've never been on a farm. Lived on a farm. Worked on a farm. I've walked onto one once. And yet, we scramble all the time for excuses as to why we're not always working. We say them all the time. I don't know if you've ever caught yourself saying it. I'll come in sometimes for lunch, and I'll have lunch with Kathleen, and go, well, I know, I just got to eat this really quick, and then I got to get back to work. I promise I'll get back to work. Okay? Or maybe I'm in my church office, and I'll take a lunch break, sometimes right here at church, and I'll take a lunch break, and I'll watch a YouTube video, or I'll play a little game on my phone. And if somebody walks into the church, I feel like I have to hide the fact that I was taking a lunch break. This is so that I can justify myself later if I take a lunch break. But I feel like I have to hide this, because if I'm not working, then I'm just being lazy. Sometimes we debate over who works harder. I don't know if you've ever been in one of those, having a conversation with people. Sometimes right after church, you're sitting around having your conversation. Oh, man, I'm just so tired. I worked a 16-hour week harvesting. Oh, I did 22. Oh, I did 25. Wow. I don't even sleep. I run my combine, like, head down, snoring, combine's running. It's good. I just use the only farm word I know, combine. Which I learned doesn't combine things. It separates things. Sorry. I'm trying to use farming analogies because you'll understand them better than I do. If I use too many gaming analogies, you'll just get lost. But we debate over who works harder. I don't know if you've been in one of those debates. I definitely have been in those debates. I'm like, oh man, 12-hour day. And someone's like, yeah, I did 14. And I'm like, sweet. So we're both tired. Good. But we debate over who works harder. We've wrapped our identities into what we do and how much of it we do. I'm a hard worker. I've got a good work ethic. I work harder than that guy over there. We constantly fret over the work not yet done. This one's really an important one. We often fret over the work not yet done. It hit me really hard as I was studying for this sermon and everything, and I took a break on Monday. Monday's my day off, and it was my anniversary on Monday. So Kathleen and I went out, and we were driving out towards the restaurant out in South Common, and as we're driving, we're talking a bit, and then we both stop, and she goes, why are you being so quiet? And I'm like, oh, I'm just thinking about all the stuff for my sermon I got to do. And I'm fretting about my sermon on my anniversary. I was also thinking about things like bringing firewood into the house as winter's coming up and I've got a nice wood stove in our new place and I want to think about getting firewood going. So I was thinking about that work I had to get done. Oh, and the chickens needed some new food that I didn't feed them that morning, so I think I got to take a look when I get back. And I had to do a run to the dump this week, and all this was coming up while I'm on my anniversary dinner with my wife because I'm so focused on the work instead of focused on who's right in front of me. We are enslaved to busyness. But Sabbath is about liberation. And it's about resting from our work. We have allowed ourselves to be caught up in the yoke of busyness, in the slavery of a workaholic culture. We equate any breaks, rest, or leisure with laziness. And then we find ourselves more tired after a rest than we were prior to the rest. Because we're so busy thinking about what we haven't done. Busyness is literally killing us. One of the guys I read about, or read his book, was Mark Buchanan, and he says that busyness kills the heart. Busyness kills the heart. He says when you're so busy, you stop caring about the things you care about, because it kills your heart. So there was a time at the game store we did, right before I moved here, actually. I was getting ready to move out here to the country, and I was going to leave the game store and that gaming culture. And the game, all the guys at the game store said, "We got to do one more big event before you leave, Andrew." I said, "Okay, sounds good. What are we going to do?" And we found out about International Board Game Day, which is becoming bigger and bigger. It's happening all over the world now, where we're having Board Game Day, and people in game stores and all over the world stop and we play board games for a day. So our store thought, you know, we could go bigger, we could go better, we could do this, you know, to the next level. And since I'm leaving, gave us a good excuse. So we did a 36-hour of board gaming event where we play board games for a straight 36 hours. I have a t-shirt that says Warcraft Ghoul on it. I wear it every now and then. Ghoul, because we stayed up for 36 hours and we're kind of like this afterwards. And on the back is a list of a bunch of the games we played. And anyone who stayed for the full 36 hours got these t-shirts. Anyways, at about 34 hours in, there was 8 or 9 of us who had not slept. We had refused to sleep. We played board games straight for the straight 34-ish hours. And my boss, had to go take a little break for something he had to go do. I don't know. Probably go take a nap. And so I was covering the entrance to our area that we were playing these board games, and we rented an extra building next to the game store just to have enough space to do 36 hours and smell bad while we did it. So I was sort of manning the door, and we had a cash register, and I was sort of doing the sales thing. And I'm sitting there, and I'm talking to a couple people, and all of a sudden one of the guys hits the table, and I snap awake. And I had literally fallen asleep mid-conversation, like mid-word. One of the guys said you were talking, and all of a sudden your head just drooped. And they like watched. They're like, it's right out of a movie, like a cartoon, and your head just sort of drooped. And all of a sudden you were out, and he slaps the table, and I jump back awake. I was so tired, I was physically unable to stay awake. The reality is that we're so enslaved by busyness that we suffer the same experience in our lives in a number of different ways, not just physically falling asleep, but our hearts begin to die. They physically, spiritually, emotionally, we begin to break down. We begin to fall asleep in a number of areas. We reach such a high level of exhaustion that we're no longer able to care about the things we care about. One of the examples I read about was when our kids are laughing and having fun and we just want them to be quiet. We've reached a level of exhaustion that isn't very healthy. When our spouse is crying but we can't sympathize. When we cease to care about the things we care about. When we want to solve social justice issues, like helping the poor, just to make them go away. When our motivation is to just stop the issue because it's bugging me, we've reached a level of exhaustion that we're beginning to crash. Our heart is literally dying. The orientation is in the completely wrong place, and our rest is no longer restful. We're falling asleep mid-conversation. See, we are surrounded by a vibrant and exhilarating and exciting creation. And a lot of exciting things going on in our world, and a lot of exciting things going on in our church, and a lot of exciting things going on in the kingdom of God. And yet, when we are this tired, we become so consumed by our routine, our stress, our weariness, and our busyness that we can't see any of it. And we just want the social justice issues to go away. We just want our kids to be quiet, and we just want our wife to stop crying. Because we're too tired. We can't notice the important things that are around us. And that comes to one of the real keys of Sabbath, is what do we give our attention to? Throughout the work week, we give our attention to the jobs that have to be done, to the tasks in front of us, to meeting our day-to-day needs. And the Sabbath is supposed to be a day where we turn our attention away from those things and turn them onto the things that really matter, the things that we really care about. A day that we turn our attention to care about the things that we care about. Sabbath is about what we give our attention to. We make a lot of choices every day about what we're going to give our attention to, whether that's our family, our friends, our hobbies. And I would suggest that Sabbath is a day, and I do say it's a day. Now, I haven't had this question yet, but one of the questions I ran into a lot when I did my study was people asked, what day is Sabbath day? What day is the Sabbath? You know, historically Jewish tradition, Sabbath was Saturday. Now a lot of people practice on a Sunday. What day is Sabbath? It's not a specific day. I don't think that matters as much anymore. Jesus did a lot of things on the Saturday that they said you couldn't do on a Sabbath day. And in fact, Jesus even argued at one point that if the priests still have to do their job on the Sabbath, are they breaking the law by being priests? What about pastors who preach on a Sunday? Are we breaking Sabbath by preaching on a Sunday morning, by working Sunday? Jesus suggested that Sabbath was not about a specific day. And I would agree with him. But I would also say this. I encourage you to not say that means that I can do anything, that I can just pick bits out of a day to be a little bit of Sabbath here and a little bit of Sabbath there. Take a day. I would highly encourage you to take a day. I don't think it's a mistake that God says, take a day. You have permission to take a day and have Sabbath. Now, there's a temptation. There's a temptation that that I cannot give attention to the things I care about until my current work is done. You've probably experienced that. I got to get this job done, then I'll rest. This job might take me 10 days, then I'll rest. This job might take me a month, then I'll rest. Or I'm going to rest today after I get my job done, so I'll get half a day Sabbath. That's solid. There's a temptation. But let me just break down that temptation really quickly for you. There is always another task. There is always more to be done. There's always more work to do before you rest. This temptation is a trap. And I do call it a temptation. I do call it a trap because it leads us further and further into the busyness, to the slavery of busyness, and we break down more and more. That temptation leads us the wrong way. The incredible gift of the Sabbath is that it comes in the middle of the busyness. So that you take it, no matter how busy you are, you take it in the middle of it all. And you take a rest. You take a break. Change your attention away from that which is busy to that which is what you care about. You need to resist the temptation to be busy and seek Sabbath in the midst of it. Seek Sabbath in the midst of the busyness. I mentioned earlier that slaves can't choose when they take a break. And I think that's the unique thing about Sabbath is that we can take it right in the middle of all our work. You got a slave driver over your back with a whip and you got to get this pyramid done. He's whipping you all the way up the pyramid side and you're putting stones up there. You don't get to choose when you take that break. But the Sabbath says, take it right in the middle. God says, take it in the middle. Take it. You got a 30-day project ahead of you. Take a rest every seventh day. Take some rest. You'll do better in the end anyways. I mean, that's a physical, that's another thing. But, I mean, the gift of the Sabbath is that it comes in the midst of work. And finally, a holy Sabbath. Another temptation of the Sabbath is to become legalistic about it. So I'm going to talk a bit here about what we do on our Sabbath day. Now, that could be whatever day it works for you. I mean, obviously, Sunday has been the Sabbath for the Christian church since Christ rose from the dead. Sunday is called the Lord's Day. It's the day where Jesus rose from the dead. And so we celebrate it. And so as Christians, we've kind of made Sunday into our Sabbath rather than Saturday. Saturday is the traditional Sabbath. Kind of pick a day. I usually use Monday as my Sabbath because I work Sunday, and Saturday I'm stressed out about work Sunday. So I tend to Sabbath on Monday because that is my day where I just sort of, ugh. Anyways. Although I'm learning that I've been doing Sabbath wrong, so, you know, this sermon is correcting me as well. Now, we get really legalistic sometimes about Sabbath. And there's a temptation to get legalistic. You know, make your list of what you do and don't do on the Sabbath. It's kind of like what the Pharisees did. You can't do a Sabbath day journey. You're allowed to walk a certain distance from your front door, and it gives you enough distance that you can turn around and come back to your front door. But if you go beyond that distance, then you've broken the Sabbath because you've walked too far, which is now work. Jesus got in a lot of trouble for doing things. In Matthew chapter 12, verse 1, Jesus is speaking to them about the Sabbath. He's been kind of marked as this guy who does the things that he's not supposed to on a Sabbath day. And he's got a dude in front of him with a crippled hand. So that is what happens. But on the 12th, on Matthew chapter 12, that's when they're walking through the field of grain, and the disciples are picking little bits of grain, and they're popping them in their mouths. And the Pharisees say, your disciples are doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath because they're harvesting grain for a snack. It's like going out into your garden, like picking a cherry tomato and like popping it in your mouth, like, oh, that's good. And they're like, nope, you just harvested tomatoes. You're working. You're not allowed to do that on the Sabbath. Oh, I love picking cherry tomatoes. And then Jesus goes into a thing about haven't you read about David eating on the Sabbath and all this stuff. And I'm not going to read this whole, it's 13 verses. Jesus essentially comes out of it and says, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And is it not better to do something good on the Sabbath than to do something bad on the Sabbath? He says that at one point. He says, we heal on the Sabbath and we feed ourselves on the Sabbath. He says, therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. He says that in verse 12 of chapter 12. But we tend to catch ourselves in this temptation to make Sabbath legalistic. We catch ourselves in this desire to quantify what is a restful Sabbath or if we're doing it right. I read an interesting quote in one of the articles I was reading this last 2 weeks that said, when we make a legalistic approach to Sabbath, when we make a list of what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do, it kind of meets this inner need to feel righteous. Because the better your list is, the more self-righteous you feel when you accomplish it. The more self-righteous you feel when you find out somebody else's list is less than yours. The more great you feel about yourself. Legalism doesn't create a healthy mentality. It creates a very self-centered mentality and an incredibly unhealthy approach to Sabbath. Just look at the Pharisees who said Jesus wasn't allowed to heal people because of the Sabbath day and healing is work. Well, this is kind of ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, isn't it better to heal somebody? I mean, Jesus makes that whole argument. I don't know if I go into that. Jesus basically said, how much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Because you'd rescue a sheep from a pit on the Sabbath. Why wouldn't you heal a man on the Sabbath? Therefore, healing is a good thing. Legalism makes us feel self-righteous, and legalism is the wrong approach to Sabbath. And in many ways, it has been the approach I have experienced in my life. You know, like my parents. Sabbath is a day for family, so we have to stay home as a family as they knit, watch poker, and I fall asleep on the couch. And my little sister plays in her bedroom. My older sister reads Shakespeare for fun. My girl was crazy. You know, we get caught up in this idea of what it's supposed to look like. And we miss the real heart behind Sabbath. And this quote is from Mark Buchanan. I love this quote. It says, cease what is necessary and embrace what is life-giving. Sabbath's golden rule is not about doing nothing or about spending time with family. It's about ceasing what the necessary work is. Whatever that work that holds you under the yoke of busyness, cease for a day. Stop. Put it aside. Turn your back on it. Repent of your busyness and do that which gives you life, which refreshes you, which draws you into closer relationship with God, with others, with creation. Seek shalom on the Sabbath. Stop what is necessary and do what gives life. As a nerd, one of my favorite book series is Lord of the Rings. And I will not misquote it like Chris often does. In the book, The Fellowship of the Ring, which is the first of the trilogy of The Lord of the Rings, the hobbits have to escape from the Shire with the ring. And Gandalf agrees to meet them in Bree, which is a little town. And they go to Bree, and there Gandalf's not there. They run into Strider, Aragorn, son of Arathorn. So they meet up with Aragorn, and he says, I have this letter from Gandalf. It says to meet him in Rivendell. So they go with Strider, they trust him, and he leads them to Rivendell. On their trip there, they are chased by the ring race, the nine black riders, the ring race that are after the ring. They can sense the ring, and they're chasing them. If you've watched the movie, you see that chase really well done. Lots of horses and fun, and it's really cool. At one point, even Frodo gets stabbed by what's called a Morgul blade. And the blade breaks inside of his shoulder and his wound is permanent. He never recovers from the wound of this stab wound that's in his arm. And it's like a dark magic in the blade. Anyways. And so they have this incredibly harrowing escape from the Shire. And they run to Rivendell. And Rivendell is a haven, a hidden valley of elves. And they finally do get there. Frodo gets healed and they rest. And they take time in the hidden valley of Rivendell. And this is what it says in the book. So they don't have this part in the movie as much. They try to picture it, but it's more best explained in words. It says this: "For a while, the hobbits continued to talk and think of the past journey and of the perils that lay ahead. But such was the virtue of the land of Rivendell that soon all fear and anxiety was lifted from their minds. The future, good or ill, was not forgotten, but ceased to have power over the present. Health and hope grew strong in them, and they were content with each day as it came, taking pleasure in every meal and in every word and song." That's Sabbath. The future, whether good or ill, no longer holds power over the day. Instead, we take pleasure in every meal, in every word, in every song, in the things that give us life. That's what Sabbath is meant to be. So there's really only one rule. As we argue over, well, on the Sabbath we're allowed to do this, we can't do this, there's really only one rule. Stop doing what is necessary. Get out from under the yoke of the busyness and embrace that which gives you life, whatever that is. I really enjoy cutting the grass. I love it. I love the smell of cut grass. I love the rhythm of it. I love getting away from my kids. I mean, I love just the stillness and the solitude that comes with cutting the grass. This is an activity that actually does give me life in a number of ways. There's no reason I couldn't do it on the Sabbath. Whereas for others, maybe that would be work. Perhaps for you, work is doing the dishes. I was thinking about this last night. I was thinking about this for Kathleen. I thought, for her to have Sabbath, to have a day where she stops the necessary to do what is life-giving, she would have to not do dishes, not do laundry, and honestly, not have to take the kids to the potty every 5 minutes. So for her to have Sabbath, she needs to not have the girls needing to go potty every 5 minutes. And I thought, man, that's going to be a tough thing to not do what's necessary for her. But you find what gives you life. And I think, I don't know if I've got an answer to that question. It's my own question that came to me as I was studying all this. I don't know if I have a good answer to it. But my best answer is, if Jesus healed people on the Sabbath, then I think Sabbath is a day where we should really be thinking about the other people around us. So for Kathleen to have Sabbath, she needs to not take a child to the potty every 5 minutes. I can take a child to the potty every 5 minutes. And in some ways, it's kind of life-giving. Stop myself there. So that's where I'm ending today. Sabbath is an opportunity to rest, a gift, to take a break in the midst of busyness. On the perfect day for harvesting, take a break. On the perfect day to go out and get those jobs and that you've just been needing to get done, that you've been putting off forever, take a break. No matter what it is that's looming over you, the yoke of busyness that holds you, break free. One day a week, pick a day. That day is your Sabbath. Focus on what gives you life that day. Give the attention the right way. Cease what is necessary. Embrace what gives you life. Let's close in prayer. Dear Jesus, we thank you so much for who you are and for the example you set for us of the Sabbath, that it is not a legalistic day that holds us slave to following a bunch of rules, but rather it is a gift of liberation, an opportunity for us to break free from that which keeps us busy. God, I pray for myself and for each person here that as we try to practice Sabbath, the gift and the law of Sabbath, that we would find a day, and that in that day we would learn the discipline of focusing on you and what gives us life, and practice repentance from busyness. Praise in your name, Lord. Amen.